Hey everybody, my name is Jason Williams. I'm, as Walter mentioned, sort of chairman of the User Interaction Breakthrough Services Project, which is the project that's kind of brought everybody here together for this workshop on business models. As Walter mentioned, we've done this two times now, one for one area of the project, nomadic and collaborative media, and another for the other area, augmented travelling. And it's one of the mechanisms that we like to use to publicise what we're doing, but also, of course, to get input from people. It's proven to be a very useful way of making sure that we're on the right track and also letting people know about the work that we're doing. So I'd like to say thank you very much for coming, and I do look forward to what we'll be able to discuss throughout the course of the day. But I wanted to start off just by talking about some of the key trends that led to the creation of this project. Before this project was put together, there was a visions group which was set up really to look at what's happening in the world right now, what sort of projects should be put together in response to this. And there's a number of key trends emerging which are really very important and underpin why we're doing what we're doing at the moment. And I just wanted to cover these first to give you an idea of where we are, why we've got to where we are today. So the first really being intercommunication between different apps, APIs essentially. Having APIs really has revolutionised what we are able to do collectively as an industry. No longer do you need to be an insider in Facebook or in Google or whatever to be able to make use of the huge abilities that they've got there. They're sort of open for developers to use now, and everybody's able to pull different functionalities and abilities together and make use of those and put them together as makes sense in a particular business case or for a particular project or product rather. And this really has made a huge difference to what is able to be done. So that's one important trend that I wanted to mention. The other being the App Store, which has happened very, very recently, really as recently as 2007, if you like. That's when I think, or 2008, when the Apple App Store originally started. It wasn't the first App Store. But what it has done is made a huge range of things possible to people just literally by the press of a button on their mobile phone. And that's, again, been really revolutionary because it's opened up very powerful platforms to developers who are in their bedrooms all over the world, to larger companies. And in the case of the individual, it means that my phone can be pretty much anything now. That's another very important trend. Another one being new interaction methods. That's particularly dear to our hearts within the User Interactions projects. So, I mean, all of you have got smartphones these days, iPhones or high-level Android phones, will know you can use accelerometers and gestures to do things. But as we move forward, we're going to see a whole range of other things that you can do with your phone and other ways in which your phone can notify you of stuff. And this opens up a lot of avenues for better interaction with the world. You don't no longer need to be staring at your phone, but you can be walking along, your phone can let you know about stuff. You can interact with things that are over there or things that are over there in a much more natural way. And that really is key in opening up a lot of abilities, which if you had to stay married to a screen would not be so easy. The cloud, I mean, a lot of engineers will say, well, that's not a new thing at all. I think really what's new is the fact that it's being used more, that access speed to the cloud has sped up now, so it means that a lot more things are feasible, whereas they weren't so feasible before a few years back. Basically, with the cloud, you can kind of see it as unlimited storage, unlimited speed of processor, and kind of unlimited access if you're talking about a wireless situation on a very fast network, and this will get faster as we go along. So basically now I've got effectively the power of a supercomputer on my iPhone. That again is another very key enabler. Environmental interaction, we're going to see much more of this going forward. So now I can use my phone to interact with, in this case, a gate at a tube station to get in, but as we go forward, we're going to see much more in the way of what we can interact with in the real world. And then, of course, social networking as well, which is very key. Turning marketing upside down at the moment. You know, traditionally, the television has been the main way of doing things. We're moving increasingly over to social networks now. And it's your guess as good as mine as to how far down that road we're going to go and how important the social aspect becomes. I was actually at a Congress the other day, and listening to a very interesting talk on the fact that now when people are shopping, it's becoming more and more important for people to get an idea of how they look in something. So a very common way is posting how you look in a pair of shoes or something to your friends, getting input on that, and deciding whether to buy yes or no based on that input via the social network. There's all sorts of ways in which that can be made more straightforward and easy. And really, it's an ability that I haven't thought of at all. I'm sure lots of us haven't thought of at all. And it's kind of indicative of the increasing power of the social network and what it will do. There's all sorts of other avenues that are going to happen through social networking, but it's a very important foundation, and that really is the data that's being collected. We know so much more about people now. We know who they're connected with and kind of who they would like to be connected in, that sort of thing we can infer. And that's very powerful information. So taking all these kind of trends together, and there are many others, but these are some of the key ones that I wanted to point out, that kind of led us to this project User Interactions and Breakthrough Services. So I think about half of you in the room will know a lot about this project, and half of you will know nothing at all. So for half that know nothing at all, it's basically a program going over 19.5 man-years, and it's condensed into about 3. And we've got 4 universities who are doing the actual research and are guided by an industrial consortium, as Walter mentioned. We're looking 7 to 10 years into the future, which, you know, is proving to be quite difficult because things have already moved on so quickly since we started the project. A lot of our original thinking is already kind of out of date. It's just how it goes in this industry, but we're sort of doing our best. And from the start, we are very aware of this fact. And, you know, we never try to say we can predict the future, but things do move very quickly. So in terms of who's involved, we've got Bath University, Bristol University, Glasgow, and, of course, the LSE here. These are some of the industrials that have been involved at core level. And I'd also just like to sort of mention some of the other industrial members, but contributors, if you like, who've spoken at events like this and have also sort of given us insight and directions to the way that we want to move forward. So where we're going is really a direction that's been taken based on a very broad view from a lot of people, from a lot of different companies and industries. So basically the vision of the project is, as I was saying, we're not going to be wedded to our screens in future, but instead be much more aware of the environment around us. You'll see these people are not holding their screens now, but are kind of interacting in a more comfortable way. The interaction methods that we're looking at will enable that to happen. And basically the functionalities are embedded in the world and become available to you as necessary and as makes sense to you. I mentioned the cloud as being a key thing, and really, you know, we're looking at the device itself being there, but not governing what you can do at a given time. This is really a convenient vehicle for a service or part of a service that you might be doing. But that service will partly be on here, it may partly be on the wall over there, it may partly be in some of your phones. We're looking at a much more complicated future where services jump out of our phones and embed themselves in the wall, in different people's devices. You know, it's very difficult for us to say we know what's going to happen because we can't, but we can envisage that there's going to be lots of services which really use a very complicated ecology of devices. And then importantly also how services will be. You know, right now we're moving less away from the situation, but certainly as the project was set up, you know, services were still pretty much stovepipe. You had your communication service, you had your book buying service, you had your map service. These will become much more mashed together, you know, as I was mentioning with APIs and this kind of trend that we're seeing. And basically combined with intelligence, which will mean that the most appropriate set of resources, the most appropriate set of functionalities will be put together for me at a given time in a given place, which will be different for somebody else, which will be different for somebody else. So really using that personalised data that we understand about people to give them what they need at a given time. So we're looking at how can we interact nice and easily with this ecology of devices. There's many devices, there's many users, and there's many services all mashed together. And so in doing this, we're looking at new ways of interacting. That's one of the key foundations of the project. And some of the things that we're looking at are how can you use pressure, how can you use projection nice and easily, augmented reality, temperature changing on your phone, actuatable displays that move so the screen changes shape depending on what's being shown, and ultrasonic haptics, which means you can actually feel things on your phone without touching. There's more and more of these being developed. The universities involved in the project are constantly coming up with new things that we can do. And really what they are building blocks that can be put together as needed for a given functionality. So we're interested in how can we interact with these building blocks in a way that makes sense for a user, given the complicated world of ecologies of devices that we all have. And then very critically, we've got this very complicated series of devices, functionalities, etc., etc. We need an architecture under there that can accommodate all of this. And this is another very important part of the work that we're looking at. So today is relatively simple. I've got my smartphone, which is connected to different service providers. Tomorrow, as I've been saying, it's not just going to be the phone. It's going to be the display in the airport. It'll be the advertising billboard. They will be communicating with each other, and they will have a complicated array of functionalities taken from services, which will also be put together. And we need the architecture to support that. Now, critically also, business models. So how are we going to make money out of this tomorrow situation? So there's going to be lots of different organizations involved here. Each of them is going to need some way of gaining value from everything that's going on here. And the technology needs to be able to support that. So what we've been constantly doing in our project is thinking about what are the business models that might arise, and how can we design the technology to be kind of agnostic to these business models, so that as companies in the future use this technology, it will be very straightforward for different actors in the chain to make money and to generate value, however they may choose to do so. The platform is a word that you're going to hear quite a lot over the course of today. And just so we're kind of, as a very high-level introduction as to how that figures into our project here, just wanted to draw a very simple map of the Apple platform, if you like. So basically, I've got my iPhone here. I've got the world of iTunes. I've got the world of the App Store there. All very powerful, all going into this one little device and letting it do anything, letting me hear anything. It's all very good. And it's a very powerful position for Apple. iBooks exist, so potentially they're making forays now into the publishing world, television world as well, potentially, and lots of other worlds too. So this is kind of the standard platform, if you like, that we talk about very often. And for many companies, you kind of ask the question, well, okay, we've got Apple, so I could have an icon on the home screen which leads onto my own service. Is there such a need really to think about business models? Is there such a need to think about configurations of platforms? It could well be that, you know, we'll have the dominant platforms and we'll have to sort of conform to those. I was just reading a very interesting article about Amazon the other day, which kind of led me to think about how platforms interact with each other, compete with each other, and how one leader can actually help another platform, give them a leg up, and potentially even let this platform jump ahead. So basically, this is my iPhone, iBooks. So that, to Amazon, for example, could be quite a competitor. Basically, I can download digital books onto my iPhone or my iPad and read them. This is a threat to Amazon because this is what they do. This is their business. So, of course, what Amazon have done, they put their... there's an app developed which you can access via the phone and buy books on there. So that's kind of a traditional way of using the Apple platform to better the Amazon business. But what they've done over the sort of last few years, which has been very clever really, is develop the Kindle app. Now, I'm not sure how many of you have got Kindles or have used the Kindle app, but it's actually very interesting how they've used that and played off the Apple ecosystem. So it's something you can download on your phone, and effectively what it does is pretty much the same as iBooks. So I can, using this, go to the Amazon Kindle store, buy a book there and then, and read it. But what's particularly clever about this, which sort of gets you thinking, so we've got the traditional route, which is the Amazon icon appearing on the iPad or the iPhone. We've got the Kindle app, again, an icon appearing on the iPad or the iPhone. Now, Amazon have also developed the Kindle Reader, which I'm sure some of you will have here, which... potentially looking at it as a very similar form factor, you could see as a competitor to the iPad in some ways. And if you read a lot of magazines, it's very often pitched that way, which do you want, the iPad or the reader? So you could see them as competitors, or you could very well see them as partners, if you like. Because the Kindle Reader does something very well, which is let you read books. It doesn't do everything else that well right now. So we've got kind of two devices which kind of play off each other. But the interesting thing is that by using what I think Amazon called WhisperNet technology, it means that I'm able to read on my Kindle, put it down, and then going to work, perhaps I don't want to take the Kindle with me, I can use my iPhone, and I can carry on reading the book exactly where I left off on the Kindle. So what Amazon are doing, are basically using Apple's platform and Apple's devices to make their own more attractive, because if it means I can read this in bed and read this on the train, actually perhaps I want to get this more because all this has opened up to me, and there's a nice synchronicity between the two. And of course Amazon's not tied to using Apple's platform, of course. There's also Android, Mac, PC, BlackBerry. So we end up with this sort of platform that sits next to Apple, which uses Apple, but actually has access to a lot of other routes. And, you know, potentially as things go forwards, I'll mention that in a second, as colour becomes possible, as video becomes possible, we end up with actually what could be a competitor. And so you could say that Amazon could use Apple to make their own device more powerful and kind of jump ahead of Apple. So we'd end up with perhaps a competitor to Apple in a way that Microsoft haven't really been able to manage so far. I don't know if it's going to go down that route. I don't think Amazon are really looking to compete with Apple. But it's just an interesting example of counterplay of platforms and how one platform can get stronger from another and end up in a situation where it could jump ahead. Now, very quickly about business models. Amazon, because they built up this greater base of users who are using this synergy between the two, have a much stronger case to get authors to publish direct to Kindle. And that sort of money in to Amazon from another source. So people are paying for electronic books via the iPad and iPhone, via the Kindle. They're getting money from authors as they publish directly. And basically, from our point of view within the User Interactions Project, we're looking at how can we develop technology that's going to allow this kind of interplay between devices and between different revenue sources. And this is a very simple example in the sense that we've got basically one user, we've got multiple devices, but we've got one service. But if you think about this future, I'm talking about mashups of services, mashups of users, and mashups of devices. We need quite a robust architecture that's going to enable this business model. Walt has really covered the agenda for today, so I won't dwell too much on that. Basically, right now we've got the introduction to platforms and what this means, what is an ecosystem, how do we innovate. We'll then be looking at views of the future from different players within the mobile space, and then ending up with a discussion at the end of the day. So I'm a little bit over time. I think at this point now I'll hand over to Carsten, who will say much more detail about the sorts of things I've just glossed over very quickly.